Just have a quick question before we start. Is that a real thing, or did you make it for the film?
It's a real ebook. Joe Navarro's 200 Poker Tells is something that exists as a book you can buy online, a physical copy since. But we learned about it and we thought it would be fun for Jerry to be listening to the tape. So we contacted him and had him actually read his own book. And that's what's in the book.
But that's anything.
But that, not all is real. I didn't make that up.
Pretty good poker players in Hollywood.
So thank you so much for coming tonight. It was great to see the film share with the audience. I'm just going to ask a couple of questions and then we can open up to everyone. So you wrote the script and you directed. You usually write the script except I think for the kind of funny story. Can you talk about what attracted you first to the material and how you developed the story?
The original seed for the idea came in 2007. We were making our second film, which is a movie called Sugar, about a Dominican baseball player that comes to the U.S. and is put into a small town in Iowa where he plays for a farm team, for a major league baseball team. And we spent a lot of time there on weekends running out of things to do in Iowa. We ended up on these riverboat casinos on the Mississippi River, which are docked there. And for legal reasons, they have to be on water, but they don't actually move. And you cross a plank, and you enter into sort of the anti-Vegas. It's like the opposite of glamorous. And we would hang out there and play blackjack. But over there, in the distance, we would see these poker rooms. And I'd never played poker, and I didn't know much about poker. And I thought, we've got to learn how to play poker, because there's something serious going on in there. One day we're going to go in there and hang out with those characters, because that's the big kid's table. And so we just filed that away, and we went off and made another movie. And when it came time to think about what to do next, we said, hey, let's get a couple guys together in one of those poker rooms and just get them on the road to New Orleans. And it just sort of evolved from there.
So, Brian, at what point were you involved in the making of the movie? Were you familiar with Ryan and Alex Young before?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a few guys in my industry that wouldn't be familiar with them, but I got involved through the usual channels. I sent the script and I had a meeting with these guys here in Manhattan, and I didn't know that I would get the job or anything like that. It was just a very, your typical meeting. It was mostly just to meet them. And I think at the table we sort of decided that we would all be heading down to Mississippi. So.
You influence a lot of like bigger movies and independent film. I mean, you're probably my sensitive actor because of your voice in Turbo.
Oh,
so very, very excited that there's going to be Turbo tonight.
It's much better in Turbo.
Yeah, it's like a change. So you like to change like big films, smaller films, and
yeah. I mean, I think everybody loves to do the smaller ones simply because there's no huge investment in this particular outcome. I mean, you get to, you're not dragging the audience down towards some bottom line by their wallet. It's just about making the best possible movie you can make for as little money as humanly possible. So it's a nice way to shoot a film. I mean, but I've had a really lucky career. For 25 years now, I've managed to kind of go from bigger things to smaller things. And I was just saying, my first film I ever had at Sundance in Toronto was 20 years ago, and it's nice to be able to do that. It's really, really nice. It's a privilege. So, I love the smaller ones. I like the bigger ones too, but the smaller ones I tend to have a little bit more fun.
Well, it's a great
part,
and I think you're amazing casting. Thank you. But were you thinking of Ben Spiderway and Ryan, or did you think about switching, or was that like?
We didn't write it with either of those guys in mind. We just got really lucky to cast two people that not only are wonderful actors on their own, but in particular kind of came together and had this very, very special chemistry that we saw immediately when we got them in the room together. We're like, okay, these guys are going to really hit it off. And I think Ryan, he was one of the people we were thinking of. He had that kind of Lucky Charm, you know, so we thought maybe you'd see Jerry Lucky Charm, you know, he has that kind of like charisma and a certain dynamic quality that, you know, he's a handsome leprechaun over here. So we were kind of excited to sit down and meet with him, and then, you know, getting to talk with him, he also had this other element that was so obvious that I don't think he's gotten a chance to show off a lot in the films that he's most well known for, but it's it was an important part of Curtis, that like ability to kind of open up and be more vulnerable and you know, have like that kind of gentle side. And it just seemed like he was gonna be an obvious fit. I don't know. So do you wanna talk about Ben, Kenneth and Ben?
Yeah, Ben was suggested to us by a producer on our movie, Lynette Howell, who works with Jamie Patrick, two people we worked with before on our movies. And they produced a movie called A Place Beyond the Pines with Ryan Gosling, and Ben played his sort of partner in crime motorcycle mechanic in that movie. That was the only thing we'd seen him in. And when Lynette suggested Ben Mendelsohn for the role, the first thing I said was, who's that? And then she said it was the bike mechanic, and I said, that guy's an actor? I thought he was just some crazy mechanic they hired in upstate New York. Because I know Derek, we know Derek, the director of that movie a little bit, he likes to work with non-professional actors, and I'm like, man, they just scored with this guy. Where did they find this dude? And sure enough, he's sort of a legendary actor in Australia. He's been doing this for decades, very similar to Ryan, actually. And we met with him, and we just fell in love with him and offered him the part on the spot.
Chemistry between both actors, I mean, you should do a TV series and you do like an adventure.
That's what we're now
at.
A
crash three
movie.
I wanted also to ask you, before I open up to the audience, about the cinematography, which is pretty much like nearly the first character in the film. You worked again with Andrew Sparrow, which I think you worked on for the films. So can you talk about like the cinematography and the way you decided to shoot like this, to the side of America and the duration?
Yeah, Andre, this is our fourth collaboration with Andre, and he's kind of, there's two directors here, but he's sort of like our third key collaborator, and when we started talking to him about the project, we were referencing the movies that inspired the film with, you know, either from Easy Rider, Midnight Cowboy, Five Easy Pieces, Scarecrow, Last Detail, King of Marvin Gardens, Fat City, like all these movies that just we loved from that era, and he was like, he knew all of them, and was like, yep, got it, and then we were done talking, and just kind of made the movie from there.
That's a perfect way to watch. You just mentioned a few titles, like that, we're done. Okay. So now, next time we do a film series on gambling or like satellite in America, we can talk of the show. Yeah. Thank you. I want to see if anyone has any question. I see you, Ryan. Yes.
Okay.
It's a question for Ryan?
Yes,
Ryan. For Ryan.
It's my legal last name. Curtis, he's an enigma, he's definitely that, and finding him was was challenging for me, but thankfully I had these amazing guides there for that sort of thing. But he really developed mostly in relation to Jerry, Ben Mendelsohn's character. I have a genuine love for Ben Mendelsohn, who's just the strangest animal I've ever had the good fortune of working with. And he's a very generous actor as well, which that I can say with confidence isn't all too common. So we just really hit it off. And I think just at the end of the day, for me, what I really gravitated towards was that both of these guys, really, they let everyone in their lives down. But in the end, they don't let each other down. And that I hung on to. At the end of the day, what Curtis, with everything he said, I never knew whether you know, the audience should believe it or not, but I didn't burden myself with that as much. Even when you know, Curtis is telling the story about how he lost his toes, remember, in my mind, that might not be true, that whole story. And I like people like that. I think if they're interesting, and what makes them tick is very interesting to me. So I felt like you kind of remained in the big room almost to the bitter end. But the thing that I always held on to was his humanity in relation to Jerry.
Very similar.
Yeah. So I'm playing Deadpool next year. You're wondering what's the last part? Any other superheroes besides Deadpool? I think that's a terrible plan. I've done it. I mean, doing Deadpool is something I wanted to do for 10 years. I'm excited about it, but no, I think that's it for me. I've punched that card out.
Do you don't
have Turbo
superhero?
Turbo superhero, for sure. I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Not those chips. I'm gonna ask Jeffrey Katzenberg. Don't want to come in Saturday. Don't want to come in Sunday. That's the same.
You will always win big if you just bet for long enough. No, I you know, that wasn't the intention was to follow Jerry's dream that he says that he has, right? Which is, you know, he it's always his excuse, like, if I can only win more, if my luck could change, you know, and he says he needs his luck to turn around. He needs, that's what he needs, that's what he wants. He wants his pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, ostensibly. And to follow him down, and then to give him that, and then to see what he does with that, and see him process that moment, and kind of, we hope that the film doesn't end on the answer of, oh, he's won, isn't that wonderful? But it's about that moment at the dinner afterwards that you two, you know, play so well, which is, you know, why doesn't that satisfy me, and what next? And both of them have to answer that question in their own ways, or at least pose that question in their own ways, and we don't know exactly how they're going to move on from there, but we see them both struggling with that question of what's next, and that's kind of how we ended the movie.
Yeah, that streak at the end of the craps table, if you look at Ben Mendelsohn and Ryan, Ben, he's not having fun. He's not enjoying this. He wants this streak to end. He wants to be the loser that he's defined himself as for so long. And he seems genuinely terrified. And when he wins at the end, kind of holds in that moment of them hugging, you think they lost because he just is not in a celebratory mood, and he's still not going into the next scene. Finally, I don't know how you got him to get away from that table eventually. But you did. You dragged him away from that table, I'm guessing, and off for dinner. But she was probably kicking and screaming on the way out.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. That aspect is very interesting. That Jerry's almost addicted to losing as opposed to gambling, and even at the dog track, how he wants to stay. I say, well, go, let's go get a steak dinner, meet some ladies, and his response is that there's ladies here, and he's just like around dog tracking Mobile, Alabama, where I don't think we're going to be meeting any ladies here in dog tracking. But he's just so, he just can't let go. So yeah, I imagine there's some kicking and screaming when he got around the table.
There's that note that he leaves you, it says like, you know, you beautiful loser on that note with like all that money. And so being a loser has like nothing to do with how much money they've won or lost.
Yeah. It's a miracle. I'm the youngest of four boys, so I'm surprised. The tattoos, you know, are funny. I have, you know, I got when I was 20. I'm 38 now. When I was 20. I got a lot of tattoos, and I you know, I'm older kid. I'm like, why did I do that? You know, what is this really? Come on. You know, the stamp on my lower back. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, so I for every movie I've ever done, I've always covered them up. It takes about 3 hours. That's a real pain in the ass. But this is the first movie I just said, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just show them. And one of them's a card, actually a playing card on the back, and that's in the movie. So I thought that was sort of fitting. But that'll be the last time anyways.
Yes.
Is which one a non-actor? Sorry, I didn't.
The
The sense of place in the actors, are they professional actors or some non-actors, and specifically the guy in the off-track betting parlor who talks about it's better to not be alone. That guy was our transportation captain on the movie. He was our teamster. He was, and we just saw, we slipped on him, and we were having trouble casting that role. And we just said, hey, Poland, why don't you read these lines, and he did.
He was great, too. He was so easy. He was an absolute natural. It's not like me. I always have to drink before a monologue. It's just like, oh, yeah, I got this. Let's do this. I got a two-hour lunch coming to me, teamster.
And then, so, you know, it was important for all those folks in the dog tracks, horse tracks, the poker tables, that they knew how to play poker, because poker is a very complicated game, and we had a poker consultant who helped us cast those parts of real players, because we tried to cast a few parts that have lines, people who were talking at the table. We cast actors in those parts who told us they knew how to play poker, but as soon as they sat down at the table, it was so clear they did not know how to play poker, and we had to replace them. Yeah. Obviously, we said, sorry, buddy, we're going to have to give you another part. and so, yeah, it was just important that it felt lived in, it felt real, that the people that hang out in the places that we're shooting in are the real people that hang out in those places.
And the people that are hang out in those, we were in all those casinos and those, like, off the beaten path, riverboats and stuff. I mean, they're fascinating people. You have a sense that these... they somehow, you know, withdrawn or abandoned society, and they sit at these tables for 14 hours a day playing poker, and they do. They sit at these tables all day, every day, the grinders, they just play. But they're fascinating, and they're hilarious, and they're charismatic, and they have so many stories. And Ben and I, we've got a couple of weeks to just go down there before shooting and just play poker. Ben was basically swallowed alive by the asshole end of the gambling industry when we did that, though. He's pretty method, so he was like, I would go in there at 3 a.m. and grab him by the shoulders and go, it's time to go home. But we would talk with these guys. I mean, half the game is just talking. I mean, you're just chatting with these people. They're just such great stories and great sort of great take on life. I just thought it was amazing. And in a weird way, the movie sort of romanticizes the Southern kind of that the dog tracks and these little, you know, casinos and stuff. But it I don't even know if you meant to do that. It was just, that's just how it is. It's really beautiful.
Very romantic place.
Yeah.
I mean, I took a day.
But yeah.
That's interesting. She thinks Jerry's going to be okay if he... Let's take a poll. Who thinks Jerry's going to be okay if he... But that's interesting, and I'm glad that you have an optimistic view.
But Curtis isn't. Curtis isn't going to be okay, also. It was the other half of that.
Yeah. 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 I think both of those guys are deep shit.
You know, we ended there for a reason, but it's left for one to decide how they feel about it. And yes, I think that he leaves that day looking at the picture of his daughter, and he's determined. He's going to turn his life around. He's going to have to go. He's got a long drive ahead of him. He's got a lot of money in that car, and he's going to have to sit with himself thinking, and he's going to pass a lot of casinos on the way. I don't know what's going to happen with Jerry. I really don't. I wish him the best.
Well, there's a TV series.
Machu Picchu on the way down to South America. We pick it up there.
we're joking. Yes, it was California Split is a wonderful film by Robert Altman. They came out the same year as Miracle Gambler, and both of those films were, you know, very influential to films that we love and films that we admire. And so yes, we do kind of what's the word?
A tribute to,
tribute to.
Even down to the title, you know. I mean, we're taking the state, and it's a river in this case, but they're very similar.
Actually, we tried to get Elliot Gould, who stars in that movie, to play the role that James Toback ends up playing in the film, with Tony Roundtree, the guy who punches Jerry in the face. And we talked to him for like an hour on the phone, and thought that we were like, you know, well, he talked to us, really. He really actually talked to us. But we thought that he must really like us because he was talking to us so much, and he was going to do the role. And at the end, we were like, "You going to do it?" And he's like, "Nah, I can't punch anybody in the face." And
then that was that. So we had an hour, we had this amazing conversation with one of the legends of 70s cinema. It was incredible.
If anyone hasn't seen Calvert's Bit, Elliot Gould is amazing.
And James Toback wrote the original Gambler, and so that we asked him, he was our second choice. He was happy to punch somebody in the face.
He will also talk for hours straight without any noticeable inhale.
But he comes here also. I'm not going to see the one.
Oh, we love James.
We love him.
We adore James.
We love him.
Yeah. Is James so back here?
Is he the winner?
Yeah.
When we were doing research for this movie, we had this idea. We didn't know how to play poker, and we decided that we really ought to learn. And we took this journey that they take from Iowa to New Orleans and kind of went to a lot of these places that we ended up shooting in. And the first poker tournament that we bought into was like this $65 tournament in Tunica, Mississippi. And Ryan was out of the tournament in like 45 seconds. And I just played like extremely conservatively so that I could sit at the table for as long as possible, just like slowly bleeding money. and I got to really listen to a lot of, you know, meet a lot of these characters who inhabit these places and talk to them. And one of the things that one of the guys said at the table was, he said, "I drove to the end of a rainbow once. There wasn't nothing there. It just faded out into the trees." And it stuck with me. It was like such a perfect metaphor for, you know, these guys and their journey and, you know, the idea of trying to get to the pot of gold and, you know, what's at the end of the rainbow. And that's really where the metaphor for the rainbow came from. And we just kind of wove it into the movie. That line was actually in the original script, but I think it got cut out of the movie. You guys didn't hear that line, did you? So it's not in the movie, but we did shoot it, and then, you know, I think that's what it means to me, just what that guy said.
I'll go first. I loved it. I mean, you know, particularly because for an actor, I mean, well, that's not true. Some actors were like one take and they're like, that's all you get. I can't do 100 takes. I love it. So sometimes I actually like it when they kind of disagree. Because Ryan would come up and say, okay, you know, maybe try this. Way. Yeah, that's great. And then Anna would come and say, well, also maybe try this. I'll be like, okay, well, one take, I'll try this. I'll try it that way. And then, you know, we'll see which one wins. But it was actually great. I loved it. I loved the whole process. I don't think it ever once, I mean, you've done it so many times together, but it never once interfered with anything in terms of process.
Well, you should have never happened, let's be honest, right? We've never given you conflicting directions.
I apologize. He's got his crap sponge sugar. I don't really know what I mean.
I just had an image of it, though, in my head.
Yeah, sounds painful. Yeah, it's just cotton candy. And a sponge sugar, stupid Canadian. One step away from communism up there.
You know, our answer is usually that we're so on the same page by the time we get on set because we've written it together and, you know, that we always think the same thing.
Terrific. I'm sorry right there.
And have you edited by yourself?
Are you reading to you? I do start editing, but I mean, you know, I edit like an editor edits by themselves, but then, you know, he joins me in the edit room at some point, and then the pencil starts flying.
The problem with editing with your co-director, who is the editor, when I don't know how to use the machine, is that when the disagreement comes, it's like, well, go ahead, do that if you want. No, but we eventually, but at the end of the day, I mean, it's our movie, and there's no more disagreements by the time it's over.
Which Russian? We shot Russian tonight, and then you're another one. Unified version of what you think would happen afterwards. I mean, we've got your version.
I mean, what's fun about editing the movie there is that we can all of a sudden we diverge in whatever we believe. I don't know that we have a unified version for what happens when the movie's over. I mean, it's been that way. I don't know if anyone saw our first movie, Half Nelson. It sort of ends with these two main characters on the couch, and we sort of set the seed for potential for a character to change at the end of the movie. But we don't show them. We don't show them go get sober. We don't show Jerry getting help. Sugar, at the end of Sugar, he's sort of is left alone in New York City. He's feeling lonely, and but we get this plant the seed of hope. And that's where I think we like to end things. Plant the seed for hope, but then it's up to the characters. And it's really fun to show audiences, because sometimes people think that we've made a really sad ending, and some people feel that it's very hopeful for all of the movies, all four. And it's just part of what's fun about this process. I think it drives a certain audience member kind of crazy, because they want to know what happens. But I just feel like this is where we feel comfortable ending our stories.
I agree. Also, cinema is so much part of which mood you are in when you watch the film. So you can change your mind every time you see the film. And sometimes you feel like, oh, it's okay, you know, I can not anger something not. But whatever. That's what I'm pretty good.
Can you talk about the scene with the horse named Mississippi Grind and what happens there when Curtis wins by betting on the Mississippi Grind horse, and how that relates to the choice of the title?
About that horse, the name is Mississippi Grind.
Oh, the fact that we named it Mississippi Grind.
The least important part of that question is why we named the horse Mississippi Grind. We had the title for the movie first, and then when we got to that point in the story, we had to give a horse a name. And I'm like, hey, what is the title of the movie? And what's the name for a horse? So we just named it that. But the more important part of your question, I believe, is what's going on there, and then why? I mean, I think, and Ryan can take off from this, but I think that what's happening there is that Ryan realizes at that point in the story that he's attached himself to another loser, and he's done this before, and there's no way this guy's going to win, and there's no way Toto's revenge is going to win. He's looked at the sheep, and he's like, there's no way in hell this long shot is going to win. And he's like, yeah, yeah, and he goes up, and he just places a bet on another horse. I'm not sure that he knew, I don't think he knew that the Mississippi Grind horse was going to win. I think he's actually shocked that that happened. And then I don't know if you can take
it. I completely agree, yeah. It's that walk of shame afterwards is what I think hurts Curtis more than anything. Not just betraying Jerry, but then going to go get his winnings. That was something that probably didn't feel very good.
We could ask two more questions.
I was just curious about in the part when they're in the hotel, when Curtis and the girl from the hotel are talking about Jorge, and William said having other people going on their face in the I was just wondering how that kind of is, how just another guy, how Jerry is another guy that's a long story.
About
Jorge,
which was apparently the other guy who
was. Jorge was the guy before Jerry. Yeah, the guy that sort of Curtis kind of fixes himself. I think Curtis is like, you know, Jerry's addicted to gambling, and then I think Curtis's proverbial big pile of cocaine is people. So I think, you know, Jorge was another big pile of cocaine for Curtis. You know, not unlike Jerry. That's the thing that Curtis gravitates toward. That's the thing that he, you know, fixes himself to, like a barnacle to somebody who is just about to either epically self-destruct or do something wonderful. So I think Jorge was that guy, and he's sort of defending him in that scene.
The last question, then? Yes? Stop question.
How much time is passing as you go from the next to the next? How easy was it to pick up where you left off and maintain the same felt?
I'll start the first one. We shot the movie in a lot of states. Five? I don't know. Maybe more.
No, I think way more. I mean, it was like seven.
Yeah, but I know that there's some. The great thing about a movie at this budget is there aren't, you know, you're not running around in transport vehicles and going from one location to the next with like a car and driver. I mean, we were driving all together. We were sort of like a big, you know, traveling carnival. So Ben and I would be in that Subaru that you see. That's how we get to Alabama from Louisiana then that day. And Ben, in terms of driving, not great. And it was terrifying. But a lot of fun, too, because, you know, Andre would get in the back and shoot, and we'd be filming these conversations we'd be having. And that through line, the love of the game, so to speak, was with us always, because we were just always all together. We were, you know, we would travel together, we would have dinner together after the day's shooting, and I mean, those casinos that we're in too are they don't want us there because we're interrupting, you know, people that are losing real money in their establishment. So they wouldn't let us shoot in some of these casinos until about 2 a.m. So we would start our day at 2 a.m. and finish at noon or 1 p.m. So they were long days, and we sort of fought a little mini war together. You never lost your place in the movie. That was easy. There was another part to that question, the editing, right?
In terms of editing, we basically shot the movie and then edited it afterwards. So, you know, I was doing some editing on weekends and down days, but it wasn't something that I would, you know, share with the actors, or, you know, we just kind of tried to keep it, you know, natural and organic to what was happening in the moment, and like allow the scenes to play out as they, you know, as felt right.
So you were satisfied with the final version, the editing, right, Anna?
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have some notes that we're talking about.
Thank you so much for coming here tonight.